morning. We will call the Sussex County Council meeting of January 20th, 2015 to order. The first thing will be agenda approval. Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning, members of council. At this time, we have no suggested amendments to the agenda.
Entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
Jeff, you got it.
Yes.
Motion, Mrs. Deaver. Second, Mr. Wilson. Any questions? Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Arlett.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. We had a copy of the minutes of January 13th. Any corrections, concerns, or questions? Okay. Hearing none, they'll stand approved. Correspondence, Mr. Moore.
I have none, Mr. President.
Any correspondence from council? Mr. Cole.
Yeah, the Rehoboth Historical Society, we granted $2,500 to help them with their exhibits and other things, and they were thanking us.
Any more comments from council? Mr. Arlett? No? Mr. Deaver? Okay. Public comment, Mr. Guy. Thanks, sir. Laura Rieger.
Hey, Paul. Good morning, Paul Rieger. It's what I just like to do, and I left out a few things last week when I was speaking with the Constable's Department. When I looked at your organizational structure for with the zoning, the planning and zoning and the assessment offices for where the constable lies, it's like with the building inspectors. I believe you have a building inspector also under the assessment, then zoning has their inspectors. So that's, I just, like I had said last week with the constable, he should be his own separate department, not under assessment. But I just have things where I know we're not King County, we're not Newcastle, not Jersey, not Maryland. But as much as I keep asking for the definition of with the what's farming, the whole nine yards each week, I just printed off something from the E-code from Kent County for their definition of a farm. And just I attached the state things for the Title 25 for the barbed wire fence for the state code for Sussex again, and Kent County's also for their barbed wire code. Just to hit the few issues, just if I can give them.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, Mrs. Deaver.
I understand he's talking about animals on a agricultural residential property. I'm trying to understand what that's about. Do I have it right? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Dan Kramer.
There's a lady back there that would like to sign in on that sheet.
Where's Mr. Guy?
My name is Dan Kramer. You got a listing this morning under grants for a church to give some money to a Cub Scout. And I want to know why are they going through a church to get it when the Cub Scout should have at least come straight and not through a church at all. And it's high time to quit giving money through the churches. If they don't qualify on their own, don't give it to them.
Vicki Ines. I'll probably ruin that. But.
Most people say Ines.
Hey, I was close then.
You're related to the senator or representative?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. First of all, thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is Vicki Ines. I'm the executive director of Reading Assist Institute. I'm here in person to thank you for the generous donation that you've made to us and the support that you've given us over the years. But I'm also here to share with you some good news, how we're planning to expand our organization. And I'll just very quickly, it won't take a lot of your time, and I've brought some information to leave with you that you can then contact me if you like. We're located in Milford and Wilmington, and we have tutors working down in Sussex County in Cape Henlopen and Indian River School District. While we have a lot of success stories there working with elementary school students who are at risk for reading failure, we certainly don't have enough success stories in Sussex County. So what we're planning to do is we have applied for AmeriCorps members to come into the state of Delaware, be trained in the Reading Assist, Reading Intervention Tutor Program, and be placed full-time in schools. The first year, we will start this September. The first year, the AmeriCorps tutors will be placed in Newcastle County so that they're close to our home office so that we can ensure fidelity of the program. But the second year, next year, my hope is that our second team of AmeriCorps tutors coming in will be placed in Sussex County in the school districts here. We are bringing in 20 tutors, and being placed full-time in the school, they will be working with 200 students. So again, for September 2016, I would like to bring in another 20 AmeriCorps tutors and have them work with 200 students in Sussex County. So I won't take any more of your time. I will leave this information with you, and please feel free to contact me.
This is volunteer, a lot of volunteer hours involved in this or not?
Well, we have over 100 volunteers working around the state, but the AmeriCorps members who come in, they will be full-time as opposed to our volunteers who are part-time or minimum number of hours. So we plan on doubling our impact in 1 year.
Thank you very much. Thank you for what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for your service. Very much so.
And you can leave those, Mr. Lawson, right down there. It'll be fine. Just give him too. See you to a third.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Next, we have Barbara Vaughn, Greater Lewis Scenic and Historic Byways. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Barbara Vaughn.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate very much being getting on your very busy agenda this morning. Excuse my voice. I'm getting over bronchitis. I'd like to recognize that Dan Parsons and Hal Godwin have been very helpful to us in the past, and we appreciate their participation in the in the Lewis Historic Byways. But it is my privilege to introduce to you the chairman of the Lewis Historic Byway Ad Hoc Committee. It's been in operation now for a number of years, and we're moving ahead very, very nicely toward certification from DLDOT. So without further ado, here's Gail Van Gilder.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Again, thank you for letting us make this presentation. I did just want to also recognize that with us, in addition to Barbara Vaughn from the Lewis Planning Board, who is on our committee, Anne Gravatt is with us. She's the DLDOT Byway Coordinator and works with us on a regular basis, and she's here as well in the event that you have any questions after our presentation. To begin, I just wanted to say that I think it's important to understand that the Delaware State Scenic and Historic Byway Program is a DLDOT recognition program. And it does not, a designation to be a byway does not come with any regulations. And I say it doesn't come with any regulations, except it has one federal regulation, which the state has adopted, is that there are no new billboards on state scenic byways. Existing billboards are grandfathered, and by billboards they mean off-site advertising and not anything that's on-site. So just to clarify that, because I know that's a question that's often asked. Mm-hmm. And in order to become a state scenic byway, it is a two-step process. There's a nomination process. And any organization, I say organization rather, any community that feels that they have a road that passes through their community that they feel is worthy of designation can apply to the state for that recognition. And it's a two-step process. First, you apply for a nomination, which we did back in 2009 and had that approved. And then after that, you have to complete a corridor management plan to show how you intend to work towards keeping that corridor with the characteristics that it was originally designated for. And that's a much longer, lengthier process, which we are just at the end of now. And so, and it is has also been administered through the City of Lewis as a City of Lewis official committee with representatives of the various constituencies in Lewis and the roadways that it, the byway passes through. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Jeff Green. Jeff Green is part of our consultant team that we hired to do the corridor management plan, and he is a transportation planner, and he's going to make the PowerPoint presentation. He's coming up. I'll just give you copies of these. These are our handouts from our public meeting. There's five of them.
Thank you.
That's all I have left. Joan, I think you have one already.
Oh, I have plenty of those. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Gail. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
This will be a status update, and we're getting ready to get into the business plan phase, which is our next effort. These are the roadways of the byway. We started out mostly with just Lewis roadways, but as we learned more about our roads, it became clear that we had to go all the way out to Route 1. So you can see New Road from Pilottown all the way out to Nassau, Savannah Road from Cape Henlopen all the way out to 1, King's Highway that starts downtown and comes out to where it joins the Freeman Highway and then goes out to 1, and then the big loop of Pilottown to Front Street all the way around the horn on Gill's Neck. We held a public meeting on November 13th and discussed, one of the elements we discussed was extending the roadways out to Route 1, and the public who attended, we had in the two sessions, we had over 100 people in attendance, and they all seemed to favor that extension. So what is the mission? Just to go back and review a little bit, it's to preserve and enhance the gateways to Lewis. You saw the word gateway all over the map. Well, I'm going to show you two ideas for gateways at two of the sites, and you'll see what a gateway is. It's just the beginning of something, an introduction. But as we go on in the mission, we talk about things like rich heritage, natural resources. We have all those in and around Lewis. And lastly, the clause is sensitive to the needs. And that's very important because we have to be sensitive to the needs of all of the people in the communities and the businesses, all of the people who help keep those roads worthy of preservation and enhancement through the byway program. Bit of history. Gail went over some of this, but the first date, the first meeting was in 2008 when a group of folks petitioned the city, formed a committee, and decided to work on a byway around Lewis. Then they went on, developed a nomination, and in 2009, under the state's Scenic and Historic Highways Program, got the nomination approved. I mentioned we extended, at our public meeting this past November, we extended the byway out to Route 1 and discussed other things that I'm going to talk to you about as well. And just a note on the funding. We've got funding from a number of sources. $117,000 came from the federal government through their byways program when it was a funded program. It's not funded anymore. The state legislatures, our legislative delegation of the state, the senators and representatives in and around Lewis, every one of them, through all the changes in the boundaries, have contributed something. And the total was $50,000 from their community transportation funds. And then volunteers. Boy, do we get a lot of volunteers. And under the tax laws, you assume $22 an hour for volunteer service time. So far, it's $9,000 worth of services they've contributed. What is a CMP? Gail mentioned what a definition of a CMP is. It spells out what we're going to do to protect and preserve the byway roadways. That's very, very simple and straightforward. The accomplishments. A public outreach report, and I provided a copy of it to Todd. Before we got the formal federal highways grant, we did a lot of public outreach, and Joan was a big part of it. went to a lot of meetings. We had focus groups. We had public meetings, 27 total meetings in all, where we decided what we wanted the byway to look like, what we needed to protect, what we wanted to do. And there was no experts. This was just citizens getting together. It was an amazing operation. When we got the byway grant, one of the early things we did, because the biggest single issue was traffic. Isn't it always traffic in the resort areas? But 27 volunteers actually went out and counted cars. We provided a copy of that report also to Todd for the county's library as well. And we came up with a lot of recommendations for transportation management recommendations that are being worked on now. I'll talk about some. And we're still moving forward. We have the CMP formal plan development going on now. So far, been 14 committee and public meetings. There will be some more. Numerous small group meetings, and by April we'll have a draft, and we'd like to come back here to council and talk to you about it. Goals and resultant strategies. We have six goals. These actually were goals that have survived through the whole process pretty much intact from nomination till today. And each of those goals, you see the words preserve and enhance, replete throughout them. I'm not going to read them, but the corridor management plan puts projects against each of these goals, recommendations and strategies that will implement those goals. Goal 2 and Goal 3 have a project. This is one of the gateways. This is by the high school on Kings Highway where Gills Neck Road intersects. It's an area ripe for development. We've taken a look at what improvements could be made to be within the context that we're trying to preserve and enhance for the byway. Just down the road is Kings Highway that goes into the historic district. It's a beautiful street. So what we want to do is suggest to those who are developing, to the county government, to you guys, what can we do to put it more in context? And you know what? The state legislators came through for us again. They've provided DLDOT funding to retain a consultant to develop a master plan that takes this plan and extends it through the entire Kings Highway corridor of our byway up to the historic district and Gills Neck all the way around the horn from where it intersects Kings Highway around under Freeman Highway and into the city. And we'll have a plan. That's one of the recommendations we came up with. It's going to really enhance and beautify the area, and we know that there will be a lot of support for that plan. Another one, out at the end of Pilot Town Road where the boat ramp is, there's a lighthouse. It's in need of repair, of course, but it's in the Great Marsh. And the Great Marsh is just absolutely amazing. For all of the natural features, the view sheds, it's gorgeous, it's beautiful. It needs to be enhanced and access needs to be improved. So we came up with the idea of a boardwalk from Pilot Town Road to the lighthouse. And then thinking about it, wait a minute, that's not enough, we thought. We've got to get that back towards the downtown area. How far to downtown is yet to be determined by us, but if we can take this boardwalk extended along the Great Marsh parallel to Pilot Town Road, we can now access the monument, and we can get further down into the residential neighborhoods to provide access to everybody to this beautiful natural area. It's another gateway enhancement that I talked about earlier. And of course, benefits to the county. You already get a lot of tourism, but the goal is to increase business tax revenue and jobs from the tourist industry. We believe that can be done by doing some better coordination, using the byway as a glue to coordinate the efforts in the county, in the city, among the businesses that, you know, bring tourist dollars in. Federal and state funding. You know, while there's no byway funds, there's other funds. EPA puts out grants. Other agencies put out grants that we can apply for to start implementing these projects we're talking about. Maintenance for the roadways. DLDOT promises us they'll come out and do the byways earlier than the other roads. Hope so, man. Access to resources and expert assistance to manage the byway. And I'll give you an example. On one of the other six state byways, and Delaware's Bayshore Byway, DEDO, the Statewide Economic Development Organization, is building a marketing and branding plan for that byway. There never was one. There's so many different jurisdictions, so many different disparate people involved. They've taken it on. Never would have happened without the byway designation. That's the sort of things that the county here can take advantage of. Identification on the state highway maps. You'll see byways on the state highway maps. The state is also working on rack cards for each byway to distribute widely, to talk about what the byways are and why they're special places, all six of them. And directional signing. The state does have some dollars available to sign byways, and there'll be a nice sign, the state's byway symbol, a beautiful flower with Lewis Byway on it. And then I mentioned the state development, economic development and tourism offices. We're working now to build a management entity. Somebody's got to manage the byway, and the byway is a ground-up organization. It's grassroots, pure grassroots. Right now we have a sponsorship from the city. It doesn't cost them anything, but we follow their rules as a civic, I'm sorry, as an official city committee. We're more than half in the county, and what we'd like to do is see if it's possible that we can also be co-sponsored by the county, just to make sure that we have that relationship between the county, the city, and the byway committee, that we can, you know, do a good job in preserving and enhancing all parts of the byway, both outside and in the city. These are what the management entity does. And basically, it manages the day-to-day affairs. It raises the money. It applies for the grants. It works with the governmental agencies. It has no other standing. It has to work with everybody. And, of course, our next steps, complete the CMP. We've got to get it done. We want to get it done by April. And as I mentioned, we're recommending a joint city-county partnership so that all aspects of the byway can be managed properly, and then implement projects from the CMP. We've already started. The transportation management plan is underway. DLDOT is working with Lewis, and they're soon going to be working or requesting assistance from the county to put together a management plan to manage traffic both in and around Lewis in the high season, based upon the report that I provided to Todd. I mentioned the context-sensitive master plan. We need to develop a business plan. This is something that working with Hal and Dan at our meetings, they've recommended that we prepare a business plan so that we can provide it to you the next time that we come and talk to you about our status, and we will do that. And then prioritize the remaining projects based upon the available funding. So those things are happening now. So that's it. Questions and...
Questions of council?
Oh, I have some questions.
Mrs. Deaver.
I heard you say safety, and that's my primary interest, and land values. But what in the world are you going to do with roads like New Road or Gill's Neck Road, which are so narrow? You could barely, you know, pass each other on without, you know, there's no shoulders. How are you going to do it? I mean, just give me an example.
We've worked really hard with DLDOT, and I think maybe I better let Gail answer this because she's been our point person on this.
Well, we have. We've been working very closely with DLDOT on Gill's Neck Road, and they have put together a plan for adding shoulders to the road to adequately address biking on the road, since we have so many bikes on that road. 40% of the traffic is bikes, and which is very high. So the really good news is that we have gotten funding to do a master plan for the entire Gill's Neck and King's Highway corridor, beginning at Route 1 and going all the way to the city of, through the, you know, to where it joins with Savannah Road on Gill's Neck and up to Freeman Highway on King's Highway. So that's going to be starting in a few months, and that master plan will address the traffic in the entire area in a comprehensive fashion rather than just piecemeal, which is what needs to be done.
So what we would have is a well-funded effort with city support and hopefully county support to make entrance into Lewis and around Lewis more like what, you know, tourists, I guess, are going to expect. I mean,
right.
When you drive into a historic town, I think usually you get a sense of it before you even get to the town.
Correct.
And I have to say, this was one of my very first items when I ran for office, and it's very, very important, and I really hope that the county will work with this. You folks have worked very, very hard for years on this, and it does pay off. What about the business plan? What's that going to tell us?
What will the business plan cost? Mm-hmm. Is that
what will it tell us?
Oh, tell us. The business plan will be looking at funding sources for projects that we want to implement,
mm-hmm.
And also administrative costs for managing the entity and where we would be able to get some funding to manage the entity going forward. Anne Gravatt from DelDOT always tells us that the byway management entities that are most successful are ones that have some paid staff. So we will be looking to see if there's a way to figure out getting at least some part-time help.
So whose property gets sacrificed? How do you do it? I mean, there's only so much space, and that's...
There will be... that's what the management entity and the Carter Management Plan will be doing, is prioritizing projects. It's a project-based plan. And really, it's not a matter of something getting, eliminated or sacrificed, but rather it's based upon available funding. And I think the projects that are most likely to be funded will be the ones that will move forward.
And but you're saying if we have to buy land, is that what you're saying?
Oh, because you're talking about preserving open space and buying land or to protect scenic mm-hmm. views and that, yes.
That
and
people who own it would be compensated.
I would say that through the Carter Management mm-hmm. Plan, the views at the Great Marsh were designated as, you know, one of the most significant views. Cape Henlopen State Park and Canary Creek and the views along the canal on Gales Neck Road were the most scenic views worthy of preservation.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, you know, we would have to be seeking either funding sources to do that and work through that, which is a long process, but it can be, you know, we will be working on that.
And other than working, I think Mr. Godwin's been to a lot of your meetings, and but other than working with me and Mr. Godwin, is this your very first approach to the county, is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
I would say not diverse, because we have met with Mr. Lawson, and we also met with Lawrence Lank a year or so ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. And this has been done elsewhere in Delaware?
Excuse me?
Didn't you do a plan like this elsewhere in Delaware? I understand you have a lot of success.
Oh, I have, yes.
You,
I did, yes.
A lot of success.
Yes, I did the okay. Brandywine Valley National Scenic Byway.
Okay.
And I still co-chair that committee.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
okay.
Jeff works on that as well. And I didn't mention, but Hal Godwin, we were very pleased that he has joined our committee and has come to our last few meetings.
I am too. It really helps the connection. Thank you.
Question, Mr. Deaver?
No, I'm done.
Mr. Cole?
I just got a couple observations, I guess. Years ago, and Lawrence can maybe remember when, but when we first started getting some of these conditional use applications and other applications outside of Lewis on the entrance, like on Savannah Road, I think we made an effort to try to make parking in the rear and different things and make it look a little more pleasing, because it is, like you say, an entrance to one of the most historical, you know, cities in the state. So there was an effort. The trouble is, I don't think we ever put anything in any kind of written policy. It was, I think county council at that time, that members supported efforts to, again, make the appearance be not so commercial looking, I
right.
guess is the way you say. There's things called overlay districts, and there's other things.
Correct.
And right now we don't have any for, like, cities like Milton or Bethel or even, you know, and Lewis. So that would be something we could possibly do if somebody could designate what stretch of road or entrances to some of these historical towns
right.
should be preserved in a certain fashion. I don't know, not to say you can't build there, but But it, again, we have arbitrarily tried to address it, and we've been good at it sometimes. Other times, it's kind of things have slipped through the crack depending on the members as they change. I would suggest at this time maybe getting with Mr. Lank and making sure you're on a notification list anytime there is a zoning.
We have asked for that, and that is exactly what we need. We need to make sure that as projects are, you know, come in the door to the county, that that he would flag them and notify us so that we could begin to work with the developer at an early time as the project.
Well, it might be helpful if you identified your sphere of influence or certain roadways or something. In other words, it may, again, just to be notified on everything doesn't make sense, but...
Right.
Anyway, so I can see that as in the short term is a good way to address it, and maybe as this develops, maybe there'd be interest in this council to look at not only Lewis but Milton, maybe Bethel, or maybe any other area that they determine is.
You're absolutely right. There are definitely other towns that could benefit from this program, and whether under the Scenic Byway program, but for the similar types of, context-sensitive design, streetscape improvements, et cetera, mm-hmm. that we work on that could really benefit.
Well, overlay districts are very commonplace
right.
nowadays
mm-hmm.
in zoning areas, and it's something
right.
we could look at. We got to revise the new land use plan, and it could be a component of that. So
absolutely.
But
right.
in the meantime, make sure Mr. Lank in his office notifies, and then you make sure you show up and get it during the public hearing process relay your interests on the appearance of something or whatever.
Right. Thank you. Yes, it's important to be involved early on, and that's key.
Very early.
Yes.
Anything else over here, Mr. Arlett?
Yes. First and foremost, thank you for being here. I think it is always a great thing when you have community involvement. You have the most vested interest in your own communities. So, but just to clarify, more than half of the byway is in the county?
Now it is,
yes. Is that correct?
Yes, we extended it because of the fact that it just didn't make sense to chop it off in the middle of the road. And actually, DelDOT likes to have the entire road designated as their preference. And the roads begin out at Route 1. And so to start with, we were trying to, see if we kept it within the city as much as possible. We were a little bit outside of the city and the county, but then when we took it to public meetings and so forth, everyone wanted it extended out to Route 1. And it makes sense as you come down Route 1 that there would be signage out there directing you to the byway, that the gateway would be there as the entrance to the byway, and as you enter Lewis, you would know that you had come to a significant area that you were trying to visit. Whereas now when you arrive at Lewis, you're kind of like, where is Lewis?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that I appreciate that for that clarification. So I think obviously, it would be very relevant to obviously include it in the communications if more than half are now part of our jurisdiction, if you would. But another, so first and foremost, again, thank you for being here. But I do have a couple of questions/concerns, and I'm sure you will, as things progress, you'll share these. But number one for me, as we all five make good quality decisions and good judgment as it relates to land use, for me, as somebody who's very temperamental and very conscientious of land use and property rights,
right.
can you share a little bit about, if a property owner does not want, and one thing that comes to mind instantly in the presentation is that there's a limitation placed on billboard. I think you shared that earlier.
Yes.
So the property rights, there are some limitations from that property
right.
owner
mm-hmm.
that are being placed on them
right.
Through this program. So that is of concern for me, I'm sure, and others, especially those property owners. So can you share a little bit about your process and how you're communicating with these landowners, and are they required to be on board or they do not want to be on board, and what is the process?
Well, no, they're not required to be on board, number one. But basically, we're working on the road and within the right-of-way as far as streetscape improvements, highway beautification, landscaping, et cetera. We try to work with a developer if we have a willing partner and explain to them that they are on a scenic byway, and as they're developing their property, that there are things that they could do to enhance not only the byway, but also their property. Because good design is good for business, and actually having a business or a development on a byway is an advantage because they can advertise that their property is on a scenic byway, which raises their property values. So there are definite advantages for property owners, and we hope to work with them, but there are no requirements.
So in the end, if they, for whatever particular reason, choose not to participate, how will that play out in the end for you in the ultimate goal here of having a a non-intrusive, you know, one piece of the byway is not participating, so therefore they can do what they want. I mean, share a little bit about the vision and your plan, because I mean, obviously there are property rights that people have the opportunity. At the same time, you're trying to provide a cohesiveness, which I think there's a value to that as well. So I think it should be interesting as we progress and how this will play out.
Right. I'm sure it will never be 100% consistent that the entire byway will be, you know, enhanced and beautified every inch of the way. There'll be areas that are better done than others. But it's, you try to do the best you can. But it's certainly a lot better than not doing anything. And as I said, I think that, you know, our goal is to bring the developers and businesses and property owners into the process and work with them early on and have them understand what we're doing and that we are trying to enhance their property and not hurt it.
Okay. And then finally, if I may, President, and that would be the partnership / the funding. What is the envision here going in the future as it relates to Sussex County Council and the public of the county as it relates to partnering? Is there funding? Is there a funding goal here in mind with the county? And what is it, what are you envisioning with the partnership here?
Ultimately, I think that we would like to apply for, I think, their community grants that you give out. We did speak with Mr. Godwin about that last week, and he advised us that the first step was to come and make a presentation to you and make sure that you all understood what we were trying to do. Going forward, once we get together a business plan and figure out what our business needs are and get past, you know, finishing up this application that we're working on, then we can apply to you for that and have a better idea of what to ask you for.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Are you looking for free grants?
Mr. Wilson.
Are you looking for free grants?
Free grants.
Are you looking for free grants, or you want us to pay you back, or are you going to pay us back, or what are you looking for? You say grants. You keep saying grants. I'm looking, what kind of grant are you looking for? You've already got $175,000 for development so far, right?
Correct.
Are you planning on making any money with this, all these extra walkways and stuff you're putting in? Are we going to pay a toll on those, or how are they going to get your money back?
Through tourism, increased tourism, which increases economic development, and brings more money to the county and the state through that, and that certainly, you know, will be hopefully paying you back.
Okay, I was wondering because. If you go to Wilmington now, you get on Route 1. Mm-hmm. It used to be $1 each stop. Now it's up to $3. So, you know, I didn't know if you was planning on returning some money back to this. In other words, I'm kind of a strong person. If you use it, pay for it. If you don't use it, why are you taxing people from Georgetown, Bridgeville, Greenwood? By the way, our towns wasn't even mentioned, as Mr. Cole here said. It's Melton and Lewis. If they're the ones using it, then why are you expect those people on the farming side, pay for those that want to tourist it.
Right. And the farmer side is very important, and especially since that's so much of our scenic views are the farmer's land, isn't it? But as I said, of course, every area is different, and an area like Lewis, you know, doesn't have much farmland left, and we're more of historic preservation and recreation and all of that, and the So that has special unique features, which we are trying to work with to ensure that those stay for future generations to enjoy, because over time, as development takes place, often the road to those unique areas changes so much that it's no longer attractive for tourists to come there, and so they go someplace else. We want to make sure that they keep coming.
I can assure you they've changed. I used to go to Lewis 50, 60 years ago.
Exactly.
In fact, I lived there all my life.
Right.
So, and what is really, if you really get back to problem, where do we stop, or should we say start, at there should be no more people in Lewis? I mean, if it's coming very close here, the same, we've got enough people here. We've got enough tourists. This
right.
place is built up enough. I mean, in a roundabout way, that's what we're saying, I think. That's what I kind of understand anyway.
That we have enough tourists?
Yes.
What we're actually
trying... Or do you want to just place them in certain places? Or what are we trying to say here? What are we trying to get to?
Well, most of the majority of the tourists coming to Lewis come for the beaches. But we know that there's a shoulder season and a winter season when we could have more tourism. And we try to encourage that. And also, we would like to encourage visitors who come to the beach and find that the beach is full and they can't get into the parks and find parking, that there are other things to do and that they will go and enjoy the other tourist destinations in the area. And one of our goals is to have a park and ride out on Route 1. And for Lewis, where visitors, when they get there, that information would be available to visit all the various tourist destinations in the area, probably not even just Lewis, but Rehoboth, et cetera. And that so that if someone comes there and they find the traffic to the beach is so backed up they can't get there, which often happens, there'll be other things for them to do.
Mm-hmm. So if you can't go swimming, come for other things. That's enough.
Thank you. More questions of council?
Again,
Mrs. Deaver.
Yeah, please. I have to say, you know, there's a new medical office on Plantation Road. It is a beautiful building. Of course, it's our neighborhood. Well, the cars are starting to come in and park, and I am so sorry. They're right there in front, and it could have been designed so much better. But, you know, it is what it is at this point, but... Can you help us in some way to encourage not to have cars parked out in front of a gorgeous building like that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that part of your plan or possibilities, or is that outside of your bailiwick?
We're hoping to not get too deep into the design of a given development.
Okay.
Your zoning ordinances
right.
talk about all that.
Well,
what we'd like
yeah.
to do is stay with the appearance of the roadway itself within
just
the right-of-way.
Just the road. Yeah.
If the property owner, when we work with a property owner, is willing to...
If they're willing.
You know,
sure.
If they're willing, then we
yeah.
can do so much more. But you've got to stay in where you have influence
yeah.
And, yeah. and respect the rights of everybody. So
with all respect, I have to say the people that live across from that building were promised some things, and they're not happy about the way it's turned out. I'm not either. And I really would like to support your efforts. When you say maintenance, you know, when I first came here, we had something called, I think it was a 21st century fund that was supposed to help us with flooding. There was no money. And I'm wondering if that is a possibility with this plan. Really, who pays for the maintenance? Do you think that's going to be funded, and then for how long?
That's always a problem. If you have a project and... you all have our draft list of projects in front of you, so
mm-hmm.
we wanted you to see what we were thinking about.
Okay.
When you apply for a grant to do a project,
right.
The question is, how will it be maintained?
Right.
You don't get the grant unless you have a maintenance plan
okay.
Attached to it.
I agree with that. Okay, so we're talking about... sustainability, not just
yes.
a one-shot deal. Okay. As property values increase because of this, when those properties transfer, we will be It will do the county quite a lot of good because transfer tax, property transfer tax, is a main source of income for the county. So I think it's a very, very good idea.
Thank you. Anything else?
More questions?
President, just one more question, if I may.
Sure.
In summary, I'm always a big picture guy, so I deal good with pictures. So in summary, this is all about primarily a streetscape, correct, along these byways, along the roadways, excuse me. And from the actual pavement itself, inland, on actual green space, if you would, how much space are we talking about here that you are trying to protect or preserve or have some input as it relates to the scape of it? Is it a 10-foot border? Is it a 15-foot border?
It is not a specific one?
Okay.
Generally, okay. As I said, we work within the DLDOT right-of-way.
Okay.
And projects come along, work with a developer on his landscaping plan, and you know, see what we can do working together.
Okay.
If you're a big picture guy, I think I only have.
Give him a big picture.
Yeah, he needs a big one. Big
Which
picture.
I think I may have one.
Well, yeah.
This is the only.
Oh, this is a different one.
Very few of those left, but if you could, you might want to just share it around.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Of the program.
Well, right. I just follow up. I just think we all agree that the byways will enhance property values. It's also good for the economics of Sussex County, and I can't imagine that we wouldn't, you know, be supportive as you go forward. And especially, I know Mr. Wilson, he doesn't like regulations and anything, and you didn't impress upon us that there's no regulations or new restrictions gone with this.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's something worth protecting, hopefully you'll be there advocating that, you know, this view or this particular feature is worth it, and as we hear these hearings, I hopefully we'll give you a lot of, you know, credibility on on your input into the process, and we'll see where it goes. But
thank you. I think the difference is, instead of just coming to council kind of, you know, willy-nilly with just, you know, we want to preserve this, we want to preserve that, we want to protect that, this has gone through a long process of a large, you know, constituency and huge public input to specify what should be protected and what is important. And whenever we can protect something, the next step is enhancement, and that's what we do.
And it's just not for tourists. I enjoy riding down these places too, these byways, and I'm sure a lot of the other local people do. So it's, you know, we make it sound like it's for the tourists.
Right.
No, whereas a lot of people live here, have invested a lot of money,
that's
call
right.
this their home, or have chosen it to be their home. So
I
think it's good all the way around.
Yes, definitely. What's good for the tourists is definitely for us.
Good for everybody.
Thank
anything
you.
Else from council?
I go along with George. I agree with George totally. I think we ought to stop all these people moving in, and we got too many people, and we ought to go down. And we ought to be left these areas open, and so we can, anytime we want to get in our own cars, we can drive down. In fact, Lewis has quit 20 years ago. I got to join here with Joan and George on this, because I'm having a lot of problems getting down Route 9 to even get to Lewis and Rehoboth. So thank you, George. I agree with you one time.
Right.
Don't believe him, please.
Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you so very much.
We're going to take those displays in the back and put them up for
That's
a week
please.
Or so outside
yeah,
of
okay.
your lobby.
Sure.
Good
great.
Job.
Thank
great.
You
thank
again
you
for
so
being
much.
Here. Thank you
we
so much.
We appreciate it.
Thank you for being here.
We'll now move on the agenda to our posted 10:30 public hearing. Mr. Moore.
Yes, thank you. This is time and place for a public hearing on an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County as it relates to flood-prone districts. Mr. Vince Robertson, Assistant County Attorney, will give a presentation. After the presentation is given and after council has an opportunity to ask questions, it will be opened up for public hearing, at which time the public can comment. Mr. Robertson?
Mr. Lang, did you
Mr.
want to
Lang?
Get the report from planning and zoning?
I can. We have an ordinance this morning for consideration. It's an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County, Article I, General Provisions, or Article 1, excuse me, and Article 17, Floodplain Districts, and Article 25, Supplementary Regulations, Section 115-189, referencing coastal and flood-prone area protection. The Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing on this ordinance amendment on January 8th of 2015. There was no letters or emails received in reference to this application for amending the ordinance. Mr. Robertson gave a brief summary of the proposal. After Mr. Robertson's presentation and some discussion, Mr. Wheatley stated he was kind of leaning towards a mandatory freeboard.
Yes.
The commission found there were no parties present in support of or in opposition to the ordinance amendment. There were three parties present, not in opposition, but questioning the freeboard issue and stating that the regulations will protect property owners. Mr. Robertson, in response, stated that freeboard is not mandatory, that FEMA does not mandate freeboard, that there is no uniform guidelines, and that there are no penalties for not building with a freeboard. And Mr. Wheatley asked Mr. Robertson to read a suggested motion. Mr. Robertson noted or read that the motion should read, "I move that the commission recommend approval of the ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County, Article 1, General Conditions, Article 17, Floodplain Districts, and Article 25, Supplementary Regulations, Section 115-189, Coastal and Floodplain Area Protection, with the following minor changes as suggested by staff. 1. Section 115-141.4D5 should be revised to reflect in the first line, subsection D4 in parenthesis above. And 2, section 115.141.5E1 in parenthesis, B in parenthesis should be underlined. And 3, section 115-141.5E1 in parenthesis, 9B in parenthesis, 2IA to be deleted should refer to section 115-141.3D1I in parenthesis, and or it's four, one in parenthesis, four in parenthesis, to be deleted. Mr. Smith stated he would move that the commission recommend approval of the ordinance amendment with the three minor changes suggested by Mr. Robertson. There was a motion and a second and carried unanimously to forward this ordinance amendment to the council with a recommendation that the ordinance amendment be approved with the three minor changes, and that motion carried 4-0. Just for reference in Mr. Robertson's report to the commission, there was a staff committee. We worked for about a year. It included Mr. Robertson, Mr. Lawson, myself, Shane Abbott of my staff, Jeff Shockley of my staff, Andy Wright with Building Code, and Chris Keeler with the Assessment Department. And we did have an assistant from Denrex Consultant by phone. If we needed to get a question answered, we could contact the young lady with Denrex as a consultant, and she would give us helpful information.
So with that, thanks, Mr. Lang. Going back a little bit, there's sort of two things at play here. FEMA has been in the process of updating its flood insurance rate maps for Sussex County for a couple of years, and those are going to be put into effect on March 16th. At the same time, FEMA has told all of the jurisdictions statewide, and I presume probably throughout the country, that it has model ordinances that need to be adopted at the same time that the maps go into effect. And so that's what we started dealing with about a year or so ago, and that was an update to our ordinance regarding floods. Everybody in Sussex County has had to adopt the same type of model ordinance. We've looked at several of them from other jurisdictions, and they're all virtually identical in form and substance, with the exception primarily of freeboard. One of the exercises we did do at the start was, because we currently have flood requirements in our code. Now, right now, the definitions are in the first part of our code. There's a flood-prone district article in the middle of our code, and then there's the actual flood regulations stuck in the back of the code and the supplementary regulations of our zoning code. We did kind of take at least an exercise of looking at whether we could just amend that. And because they were spread all over the place, and to get the wording to match up to the way FEMA wanted to do it, it just wasn't workable. And frankly, I think it's a more user-friendly document now because we put it all in one place. So if you have a concern about flood issues, you're going to go to one place in our code, and it's all going to be right there. As Mr. Lang said, about a year ago with the committee that he referenced, we started working on Sussex County's flood ordinance, and it's gone through probably about 15 different drafts. Along the way, everybody on the team that Mr. Lang talked about has reviewed it, and we've also sent it off to Rebecca Quinn, who's DENREC's consultant. That was vital because DENREC and FEMA ultimately have to approve our ordinance by March 16th, or else Sussex County loses its eligibility to participate in FEMA's flood insurance program, which is really significant. That means that people who need FEMA-backed flood insurance would lose their eligibility for it, property owners would. So that's one of the reasons we've been working on this diligently for a year, why it went through planning and zoning, and why it's before you today. As I mentioned, there currently are flood provisions in our code that are similar to what we have in this ordinance. One change is that it actually designates a floodplain administrator, which is Jeff Shockley. I'm not sure if he's here this afternoon, or this morning. But anyway, he'll be the one that will administer our flood ordinance. He'd been doing it in the past, but through this, it actually designates that official and the responsibilities of that official. The big one that we've talked about before is that it addresses freeboard. FEMA requires that everything in a flood zone has to be built above a base flood elevation, which they establish. So that's the mandatory requirement set forth by FEMA. Any jurisdiction can then say, all right, well, the jurisdiction wants you to go a foot or two above that or higher than that, I suppose. But FEMA sets the mandatory level for that. We came before council last year on that to get some guidance so that we could finalize the document, and council's recommendation was not to have a required freeboard, but if somebody elects to go up a foot or two, they would also get a foot or two of additional height at the top because the county's height limit is ordinarily measured from base flood elevation. So if you have a height of 35 feet measured from base flood elevation, you get 35 feet. Without that change, if you went up a foot or two, you would compress the amount of building space. This way, if you go up a foot, you get a foot of height at the top, 2 feet, another foot, 2 feet of height at the top. So that gives some people some flexibility to design their homes how they want. Maybe it incentivizes them to go up because they'll get a little bit higher structure at the top. Also, if they incorporate voluntary freeboard, they would likely get reduced rates on their flood insurance. As part of this exercise, we did look at what some of the other jurisdictions were doing, and we hope to have some type of uniformity, but frankly, they're all over the place. there's not any real uniformity. Everybody's kind of in the process of adopting this right now, so this maybe is not the most up-to-date, but several towns haven't established it yet or are waiting for Sussex County to establish their freeboard measurement. Slaughter Beach had done away with freeboard. They're waiting on what Sussex County does. South Bethany has basically done the same thing that Sussex County is proposing in this ordinance, which is, that you get additional height if you add voluntary freeboard. Some of the others, like Dewey Beach, are 12 inches. Some are 18, some are 2 feet. They're just sort of all over the place. So it goes anywhere from what FEMA requires at base flood elevation to additional freeboard. It's just sort of all over the place.
And we'll allow how much freeboard? In other words, we're going to establish the minimum. But if somebody says, I'd like to go higher, do we have a limit on how high?
No. I mean, I guess you could say we do in that you can't build something higher than 35 feet. But as far as freeboard goes, you could go 5 feet if you wanted to. You would get 2 feet of additional height, at the top. Mm-hmm. But you could still elevate it, 5 feet at the freeboard at the bottom.
Instead of the floodplain, why don't we just work off the sea level rise or sea level? Be done with it.
Well, what we're working off of is a set of documents that FEMA has established, which are the flood maps. So those are uniform for all Sussex County and all the jurisdictions in Kent County, Newcastle County, and other states. That's a federal program that's mapped, all of the flood areas all over the country.
And one point to Mr. Cole's question, the maximum height that you could increase would be 2 feet. Height. Even if you decide to go 5 foot of freeboard, you're still only going to get 2 foot of height max.
At the top end.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And just to follow up to that, too, we talked to insurance agents along the way, too, some reputable ones in Sussex County,
Reputable ones?
Reputable, yes, yeah.
like lawyers, pretty hard to find.
But they all said that, you know, the first, and I don't know where the cutoff is, but there's a diminishing return. You know, if you go up 5 feet, you know, it's not, you're not getting the same discount for every foot that you would at a foot or two. It sounds like the biggest discount would come if you elected to go up a foot or two.
Now, if we adopt this, you're thinking some of the other towns then will mirror what we've done, and so we'll bring a little bit of uniformity to it. That's one question. And the other question would be, I know in the past we got in trouble. They'd come and do inspections, right, Lawrence? And then they'd get back to us and say, you know, how'd this happen, and other stuff. We got a lot of properties that aren't in compliance. Even some of the, you know, these additions and some of these, I guess, campgrounds and different things, and they got propane tanks and all this other stuff. Are we still have the potential of getting in trouble, meaning we'll, you know, get a penalty or something in the future because of so much existing stuff that's not right?
The properties that are not in compliance are typically pre-existing. Some that have been, we found violations that had to be corrected. We had issues with the Board of Adjustment will not consider a variance in the flood regulations because then we jeopardize ourselves putting the county in a position where we could lose the benefit of flood insurance. So the board's been very tight on taking any applications for variation from the regulations.
Right. So if somebody did some modifications to his home and they came by and got an inspection. We didn't even know about it because they didn't take out any building permits or anything like that. And it gets picked up. We can go in and make them correct it.
Make them correct. Years past, we had issues where, and the surveyors actually pointed it out to us. We had issues where the house was built, the inspection took place, it conformed to the regulations, and the surveyor goes out a month or so later to do a site in close proximity and said, oh, yeah, we did that house. But it wasn't enclosed the last time we were here. And what they did after they get their certificate of occupancy, they were enclosing the lower level. So that became an issue, and it was pointed out to us by the surveyors. Yeah. And what happens, too, it was also pointed out to FEMA. And right. FEMA now requires in the flood elevation certificate that pictures are included.
Oh, mm-hmm. Well,
so we have verification for FEMA, for us, for Denrac, everybody gets...
For an opening in the bottom,
That was the biggest problem. They were enclosing...
Right.
Or finishing areas that were not supposed to be totally finished.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's areas when you get access into your unit from below, and there is stairs to get into the unit,
mm-hmm.
but they would carpet them, they would enclose them with paneling, or they drywall them and all that kind of stuff, and we had to stop it.
Like finishing your garage.
And right? That's one of the benefits of this ordinance, that actually that application process and the process that Mr. Lank just described is spelled out in detail in this ordinance, so that puts Mr. Shockley on a better footing when he says to a builder or a surveyor or a contractor, this is what I need. It's not him saying this is what I need. It's what the ordinance is telling him he needs. So that'll put him in a much better footing dealing with the public and contractors and surveyors, et cetera.
And for the record, Mr. Shockley is here, too. He's right up front.
Oh, here. I'm on chip.
A lot of responsibility.
Any more questions of council?
Yes. Go ahead.
Mr. Arlett.
I just want to convey... or reiterate or reconfirm the good councilman Cole as from District 3 there, but there is a ceiling, correct? As it relates to if the homeowner, yes, this is optional, but if the homeowner decides to go up 5 feet, his overall ceiling cannot go up 5 feet.
That's correct, and that was sort of a discussion that we had internally, and that's what came before council last year was that, right, it's a 2 foot limit. You could go 5 feet, but you're only going to get 2 feet.
You're going to lose home square footage inside the home.
What's that?
You would lose the square footage inside the home.
Right.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Because we didn't want, you know, sort of the end result to be
right.
Skyscrapers on pilings, basically.
Right.
Yeah. And have a private deed restrictions, you know, like to North Bethany example, you have some homeowners associations that have strict limits. And people have spent a lot of money to go a certain height, and now all of a sudden maybe their neighbor can go 2 feet, and all of a sudden that irritates them. Do their private deed restrictions supersede?
They would.
They could still enforce those, but a guy will get a permit from the county government
right.
saying they could get that 2 feet.
Right.
So if they go ahead and build it, and then the neighbors show up and they see it, it's a little late then. Then they'd have to do, what, a variance?
Of course, it's not in violation of county ordinance.
No, there's processes in the restrictive covenants that establish that. So they'd either have whatever it would be, a variance or
enforcement,
I don't know which. But
so what would a homeowners association do? Have to be, I mean, they may not even be part of this process. I mean, getting a building permit and not even realizing this house is already going to exceed the 2 feet, which in their deed restrictions, such and such. How do we, is there any way we need to notify anybody maybe to tell them this is going on? Because I don't know how they're going to catch it.
Well, I know with most of the restrictive covenants that I deal with on oceanfront communities and the ones that Mr. Morgan attested this to, I think, they have architectural review committees, and you have to submit a detailed set of plans show the elevations and everything else. So,
okay, that's true.
You know, there's going to be a process to vet that out as they go through it.
No, I've just got. Hopefully, there's a process. I'm sure some homeowner associations are more observant than others. And
That's true.
Same problem when we amended the regulation is to increase our heights to 42.
Right.
But a lot of the developments were 35. Our regulation were 35, but the way they were measured were different. Mm-hmm. And we would measure 35 originally between the peak and the eave, and we were getting some. Looked at like 100 different applications for building permits and realized that somebody could come in and put an A-frame building up and could be almost 70 feet in height. So we changed the way it was interpreted and went to the peak.
Right.
So that helped. And allow the single-family residential subdivision go to the peak anyway at 35. So there is some number of problems already.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Questions of council?
I believe I heard that chairman of Planning and Zoning recommended it mandatory. Did I understand that in your report?
He said he was going in that direction
mm-hmm.
to make that it should have been mandatory.
But we would comply with the basics, and that would give people the best advantage to get a lower premium flood insurance rate. Is that correct?
What we're complying with is the requirements that FEMA has established.
We have to.
Mm-hmm. We have to. And I mean, obviously,
right.
FEMA is not going to establish a deficient requirement.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what then the flood insurance rates are set on, is based on the FEMA requirements. If somebody wants to reduce them further, they
sure.
could
uh-huh.
add in freeboard on their construction.
Right.
And it would only benefit their property.
Right.
Right. And what if people don't want to do that? And who's going to pay for the damaged homes?
They would still have to comply with the basics of the FEMA regulations.
Yes.
Which would be no construction below base flood elevation, which is a
right.
requirement, which is a footage mm-hmm. above mean sea level, basically.
Right. Mm-hmm. But if that's inadequate, then hopefully they would have that flood insurance. Can people build without flood insurance? One of these homes that we're talking about?
There are homes in Sussex, Canada that have been built without flood insurance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
they pay cash.
They typically
mm-hmm.
paid cash for
right.
the construction. They didn't get a loan because mm-hmm. most of the lending institutes require flood insurance.
And when the calls come in about the flooding, where does the county stand?
Well, if the county adopts this ordinance, what we're doing is complying with what FEMA has determined
yes.
is the appropriate height for
right.
constructing a home. So,
which means?
That we're on a good footing. I mean, as
oh,
I said.
Oh, sure. I'm not saying we'd be liable for. I'm just concerned about the damage. And, they're just going to, if it's really badly damaged, you're just going to have to give it up, right?
Well,
I mean, I've seen that. I've seen that.
I'm not going to speculate on.
What would they do? What would they do? If the home is ruined.
Well, it's going to depend on what their insurance coverage says. There's so many variables that go into that,
That's why I'm talking mandatory, like Mr. Wheatley suggested.
What question to the council?
What's mandatory? I missed it.
Mandatory is base flood elevation.
I know that, but I don't know what mandatory means. What should you say?
Oh,
what should be mandatory?
Freeboard.
Freeboard.
Oh.
Whether we go 1 foot or 2 foot.
I just thought you heard it.
Yeah.
If there are no other questions from County Council at this time, we can open up the public hearing. Is there any member of the public here today that would like to address this issue? Any member here that would like to address this issue? Seeing none, Mr. President, we can close the public hearing on this matter, and Council would be able to act.
Thank you. We'll close the public hearing and close the comment. And Mr. Moore, if you would read the short title.
An ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County, Article 1, General Provisions, and Article 18, Flood-Prone Districts, and Article 25, Supplementary Regulations, Section 115-189, Coastal and Flood-Prone Area Protection, as amended with the three minor changes that Mr. Lank read into the record.
I'll make that motion. That we adopt
motion, Mr. Cole,
ordinance.
To
second.
Adopt. Second, Mr. Arlett. Any questions on the motion? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver.
The motion complies with the basics that FEMA requires, so we don't have any choice. But it's more work for us if each individual home builder has to make those decisions, and it's not mandatory. It's more work for us. It's hodgepodge, and I'm not voting for it.
Mr. Cole?
I'll vote yes. I think that it brings us into compliance with FEMA regulations and their mandated requirements.
Mr. Arlett?
I would also agree to that, and I will vote yes, and I appreciate all the time and effort and energy and hard work that you all have put into this, and I believe it should be optional because, in the end, a landowner chooses to purchase a home, and they do carry some risk with that decision. So it is optional, and I believe yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I first thank you for all the work. I know it's not been an easy process in some cases. I did attend the FEMA workshop at Cheer Center a year or two ago with all these flood maps out there, and all the public was there. Hundreds of people came in and looked at these things. We are meeting what FEMA requires us to meet, and I do think that the person who builds their home should have the ability, if they choose, to make it higher than standard freeboard. Mm-hmm. But we shouldn't mandate they've got to spend the extra money right. If they choose not to. So I vote yes, motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you again.
Now we'll back up to Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President.